Welcome back to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Science fiction is typically viewed as a genre, or maybe a subculture. But a new book makes the case that science fiction after World War II is one of the most important and most under-recognized influences on contemporary pop culture. What's more, author Alec Nevela Lee argues that most of that influence was mediated by one man, John W. Campbell Jr., who edited one magazine that over the course of several decades bore the names Astounding, Astounding Stories, Astounding Science Fiction, and finally Analog Science Fiction. Alec Nevela Lee's new book is also called Astounding. Alec, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Heather. Glad to be here.
Where do you see the fingerprints of John W. Campbell Jr. in today's culture?
When I look at today's culture, I kind of see Campbell as the guy who inaugurated sort of like this main sequence of science fiction that runs through shows like Star Trek, Westworld, shows that are what you might call hard science fiction. On the one hand, you know, science fiction that, you know, takes a lot of, thought when it comes to scientific accuracy and plausibility, which also, you know, uses those tools to explore things like social behavior, cultural change, ethics, and you can kind of trace that tradition, back to Campbell and what he was doing in like the late 30s and early 40s.
You also mentioned that George R. R. Martin, the author of Game of Thrones, says he was strongly influenced by Campbell. Neil Gaiman, a popular author, was influenced by him. That he seems to have these threads and connections in so many places.
Well, it's funny because, you know, Campbell himself is not as famous as many of the writers that he developed. He's probably best known to general readers as the author of a story called Who Goes There, which was adapted as the movie The Thing. Mm. But his influence as an editor was enormous. And science fiction writers and fans who kind of came of age at the right time, saw him as this kind of heroic figure. You know, he was the guy who was in charge of the genre. He was controlling what science fiction was about, you know, the kinds of stories it was telling and the subjects it thought were part of its purview.
It's interesting. You write that he actually had grown up wanting to be a scientist and maybe viewed his magazine as a little bit of a laboratory for ideas and stories.
Yeah, I mean, I think Campbell's like secret goal for his entire life was to be a great scientist, and you can kind of see that impulse in some of the stranger things that he explored later on. He went to MIT and Duke University, and came out kind of expecting to become this great inventor, sort of this heroic figure of a scientist, and didn't quite work out. But I think that he actually ended up channeling all of those ambitions into the fiction that he published.
I'm talking with Alec Nevela Lee about his new book, Astounding. Alec, you already said that really where Campbell's influence was not in his own writing, but in all of the other people that he employed or edited and how he shaped some of the storylines of the day. And this book is not just about John W. Campbell Jr. himself, but about three of his, you say, most important collaborators or colleagues, one of whom is Isaac Asimov, arguably one of the most famous science fiction authors of all time. What was his connection to Campbell?
So Asimov was a fan first. He was an avid reader of pulp magazines and a member of some of the earliest fan groups in New York. And he wanted nothing more in his late teens than to become a science fiction writer. And Campbell was his hero. And so Asimov sent the very first story he ever wrote to Campbell and actually took the train to Manhattan to meet with him in person. And Campbell kind of saw him as his protege. You know, he saw them as this, you know, willing subject who he could kind of influence and mold. And so, Asimov eventually broke in. He was 19 years old when he published his first story in Astounding. And, for the next few years especially, you kind of see this pattern where Campbell and Asimov will talk through ideas and Campbell will give Asimov an assignment, essentially, and Asimov will write up, you know, the idea as a story. And so ideas like the three laws of robotics, which have had a massive influence on AI and robotics and, you know, other fields. I mean, those were Campbell's ideas, and he kind of used Asimov as this instrument to kind of get that stuff into print.
So Asimov is one of the three important colleagues that you write about in Astounding. Another one kind of seems to come out of left field, at least for me, is L. Ron Hubbard.
Well, everyone looks at the title of this book, which mentions Asimov, Robert A. Heinlein, and Hubbard, and they ask, you know, so what's Hubbard doing there, right? Because he does not have a reputation as being a very good writer, which is basically, you know, accurate. He was not great, but he was a very popular pulp writer. He kind of ended up paired off with Campbell by accident because, you know, he had a following among readers of Western fiction or adventure fiction. And Campbell's publisher or Campbell's, you know, like the owners of that company just wanted Hubbard to come in and write science fiction for them. So they weren't really, you know, on the best of terms early on, but, you know, they really hit it off. You know, they were very similar in a lot of ways. And, you know, Hubbard's impact on the people around him was incredibly profound. You know, he may not have been a great writer, but as a personality, you know, as someone who was just part of that world, you know, for that period of time, you know, he made a huge impression on people like Campbell and Heinlein, who were not easily impressed.
And of course, I mean, he founded the Church of Scientology. He created a social movement, and that's something that Campbell maybe wanted to do, and maybe Asimov as well. Was that kind of a common thread?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, the biggest thread or the biggest scoop in this story for me was the extent of Campbell's involvement in the ideas that kind of evolved into Scientology. And what I discovered is that, you know, these impulses are right there in the science fiction of the 30s. And you know, we're talking about things like turning psychology into a science, into, you know, something that's reliable and that, you know, can be treated almost like a subset of physics because it, you know, has the rules that you can follow and get certain results. And you see this, you know, in Asimov's robot stories and stories that Heinlein published throughout that period. And then after the war, you know, Campbell kind of wants to do it for real. He you know, he's very concerned about the atomic bomb and about, you know, the possibility of nuclear holocaust. And, you know, to his mind, the solution was like a new psychology that would actually, you know, change society and kind of affect the way people behaved. And Hubbard was kind of independently developing these ideas. And when the two of them got together, yeah, I mean, Campbell's underlying motivation was to kind of take the ideal of a scientific psychology that he'd explored in science fiction and actually make it happen in the real world.
You've mentioned the name of Robert Heinlein several times already. He, of course, is the fourth person in your story. What puts him in this group?
So I think Heinlein was probably the best science fiction writer of that period and maybe of all time. And he was great from the beginning. He submitted a story to Campbell when he was in his early 30s, and it sold. And the two of them just immediately saw each other as equals. They only met a few times before the war, but, you know, Campbell talks about Heinlein like, you know, he was sort of the fulfillment of everything that Campbell was trying to do in science fiction. And I think if you read those stories now, yeah, I mean, they really stand out. And, you know, I think as far as Campbell's influence on science fiction itself, Heinlein, especially during the period before the war, was like the embodiment of everything that Campbell was trying to do.
I'm talking with author Alec Nevela Lee. His new book is Astounding, and it talks about John W. Campbell Jr., the editor of Astounding Science Fiction magazine, and some of his closest colleagues. You call it this circle, Alec, and a circle that is composed entirely of white men. And in some cases, you say that the science fiction community at that time, and maybe stretching forward as well, was hostile to women. And in fact, important women were essentially written out of the story, one of them being Heinlein's second wife. So talk about some of the important women that you feel have gotten short shrift and how that played out at that time.
Yeah, I mean, this was a huge part of the story for me and a big part of what I was trying to accomplish with this book, because it's true. Like, these women have kind of fallen out of the history of the genre, and they played a huge role, you know, in this period and afterward. So you mentioned Leslyn Heinlein, who, you know, during the years that we're talking about here, you know, Robert Heinlein referred to her as his collaborator. The other, you know, figure who I find fascinating is Campbell's first wife, Donya Campbell, who, you know, played in some ways the same role in his career that Leslyn did for Heinlein. You know, she's his partner, his collaborator, at least, you know, in terms of generating ideas and talking through stories. And, you know, she was effectively his unofficial co-editor during the first few years of Astounding because he needed someone to read stories and pass along the good ones. And, you know, she really shaped his ideas and his writing. And one of the most, like, amazing things I found while doing my research is that there's actually a letter that Heinlein sent to Campbell after Pearl Harbor, all right? And at that point, Heinlein wants to sign up, you know, for the war effort, and Campbell is kind of dithering because he's not sure whether or not he can, you know, step away from his magazines. And Heinlein essentially says that he thinks that Leslyn and Donya could do as good a job, if not better, of editing these magazines than Campbell could. Which I think just speaks volumes about the importance that they had to their husbands' careers.
Another theme that emerges reading about each of these four men kind of individually is that all of them shared a deep sense of social and cultural isolation. It seems that multiple of them may have struggled with mental health issues. And then they were all kind of drawn to or engaged in, you know, mysticism, pseudoscience, and they felt free to kind of embellish on the truth even in their real lives, not just in their stories. What do you make of that? What do you think is the significance of that kind of sense of difference and maybe rewriting of reality as well as their fiction?
Well, I think science fiction, you know, then as now, you know, tends to attract outsiders. You know, it tends to attract people that don't always feel comfortable in the world as it is. And so they're drawn to science fiction because it kind of presents this vision of the world where, you know, being different isn't, you know, a bad thing. It can actually be a source of power. And it's actually the outsiders who are the ones who make a difference. And that's a great theme for fiction. But yeah, I mean, the same impulses that you see there can also kind of get transferred into real life. And so you have someone like Hubbard who blatantly falsifies his past and tells stories and inflates his war record and, you know, recounts events that never happened. But you see it, you know, to a certain extent with Campbell and to other writers from that same period. You know, these are people who were kind of inventing themselves, you know, at the same time they were inventing these fictional worlds. And it's not surprising that you'd see both tendencies, you know, often in the same person.
And yet, perhaps a little concerning, because you write, and I love this sentence, their subculture has become our global culture, and its pattern is strangely like that of their lives. What do you mean by that?
Science fiction can seem very inevitable today. You know, we take it for granted. And a lot of the things that it talks about and cares about, you know, we're just so used to it that we're like, oh, yeah, that's what science fiction should be. But in fact, you know, science fiction is a subset of all the things that it could potentially be about. You know, it decides to emphasize things like space travel, for example. When you look at it objectively, you know, it's unclear why space travel should be a part of humanity's future. I think it originally appears in science fiction because it was a great backdrop for stories. You know, the idea of space kind of gets grandfathered into the genre, you know, after it starts to take itself more seriously as prediction. And that's true of stuff like ESP and psychic powers, right, which kind of appear in like the early 30s as a plot point. But then later on, you know, Campbell and his writers, they start to see themselves not just as like entertainers, but as people who are actually forecasting the future, or at least kind of giving people a sense of, you know, like possible, you know, ways that the world could change.
Alec Nevila-Lee's new book is called Astounding. Alec, thanks so much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you. This was great.
Until next week, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Thanks for listening.
Living Lab Radio is produced by WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio in Boston. It's produced by me, Elsa Partan, and Heather Goldstone is executive producer. Funding for Living Lab Radio comes from the Candida Fund, investing in transformative leaders and ideas. Theme music by Stellwagen Symphonette.